What are you doing?
Can't talk right now. Good morning, everybody. Good to see you all. I wanted to take advantage of Passover in order to say a few things that might be a little new to some of you. And Elijah. Elijah, Eliyahu Hanavi. And Eliyahu Hanavi really is a fascinating character who appears at the Seder. And we will be able to learn a little bit about him and why he shows up, because I think a lot of people have a lot of misconceptions about him. So let me begin by just telling you about two books that I discovered. One of them is the book called Becoming Elijah. And Becoming Elijah is written by Daniel Matt, who's a wonderful major scholar of Jewish mysticism, a translator of the Zohar, which he spent 20 years doing, quite a remarkable fellow, known him for many years. And I just wanted to just give you a sense of what it's about. And then we'll talk about another book, which I have not yet read, which I'm looking forward to. It just came out a few months ago, which I discovered only this week. And it's called, it's by Malcolm Brown, B-R-O-W-N. And Malcolm Brown is wrote a book called Elijah as Bodhisattva. And I've often thought of Elijah in that sense. For those who are not familiar with the term Bodhisattva, it talks about the fact that the Buddha, when he had reached what it's called Nirvana or Nibbana, decides not to enter into that state of if you will, ultimate enlightenment, but to return back into the world and help others reach that point. So just about Elijah. Elijah starts off in the Bible, of course, as a very fierce prophet, and he changes over the years, and he really presents, Daniel Matt presents a very, very vivid, it's part of the Jewish Live series of Yale, Becoming Elijah, and he traces how he develops from the Bible to Rabbinic Judaism, to Kabbalah, and Jewish ritual, and then, of course, something very important, culminating in a sense of Elijah as a folk hero who basically appears in various situations and helps people through tough times. And Elijah, of course, becomes known as the harbinger of the Messiah as well. So he has a lot of different roles, and he remains alive because in the biblical account, it's never mentioned that he dies, just that he ascends into with a chariot into heaven. And there he becomes, if you will, someone who is remarkable in the Bible. Only one other person is said not to have died, and in a sense is still alive. So this development, it's a very good read, by the way. I really recommend it, Becoming Elijah. It's a very easy read. It's not written for academics. It's written for lay people. And I think you can really, really appreciate it. The book stops with modernity at the end of the 18th century, and we do not hear the stories of Elijah as much as we once did. There are a number of collections of stories of Elijah appearing in folklore. So Elijah is, if you will, a marvelous kind of metaphor, if you will, even. And matter of fact, the book I understand by Malcolm Brown, Elijah as Bodhisattva, basically goes through Elijah's life, and he tries from a Buddhist perspective to understand it. It's sort of, he calls the book an interspiritual study, which I think is a very interesting way we should be approaching many, many things. So Elijah becomes, he starts and he becomes. The 16th century Kabbalist Moshe Cordovero writes this about Elijah. His mystery is really the mystery of divinity spreading. Divine energy clothes itself in him, extending to the world. Elijah never appears in the world without the mystery of divinity revealing itself through him. And the mystery of God on earth is the mystery of Elijah. The closest that divinity can possibly become to humanity is the mystery of Elijah. Elijah also appears in Kabbalistic and Talmudic context as someone who brings messages from the divine. He appears, the Gilui Eliyahu, he appears to sages and mystics, and they bring messages, of course, to him. One of my favorite ones is the Talmud, where there's people in a town square, and there are two jesters entertaining the people, and the rabbi who's there sees a vision of Elijah, and he asked him, which of these people is going to be rewarded with a portion of the world to come? And as someone who enjoys humor, he says, it is the jesters who make people laugh, will certainly have a portion of the world to come. I'm all for jesters. And there's also this sense of Elijah in his later manifestation as someone in Jewish folklore, is that he is basically someone who shows the virtue of chesed, of loving kindness. And the stories are, of course, you may have heard many of them. Elijah approaches a humble home on Erev Shabbat, and he knocks on the door. He's dressed as a beggar, and he says, you know, I have no place for Shabbat. Maybe you could take me in. And the Balabayat, the master of the house, says, you know, I really would love to, but I only have a few very little things. Okay, I'll share them with you. And he enters, spends Shabbat with them, shares whatever little food he has. And before Elijah departs after Shabbat, he leaves a sack, and they open the sack, and the sack, you know, as we have in folklore, is filled with gold and diamonds, and of course they are being rewarded for their acts of chesed as well. So Elijah, in the book by Malcolm Brown, let me just see if I can find it here. Okay, hold on. Elijah. Yeah, I have it right here. Hold on. In the book by Malcolm Brown, we get another thing. It's an interspiritual commentary, as it mentioned. Largely, though not exclusively, Buddhist-inspired. It's about the life of Elijah as recounted in the Bible. It treats the externals of his life as metaphors for internal mind states. His story as a labyrinth-like journey through enlightenment, the unfolding realization of a non-duality of himself and God. Elijah begins with what he calls the creation of the national God, but then he progresses to realizing that that God is the ground of all being. And while the story is a dimension, it talks about inner struggle. And of course, Elijah does struggle. You may recall one of the stories of Elijah where he tries to, in a sense, enter into the same kind of mindset, if you will, of Moshe Rabbeinu, Moshe, our teacher, and goes to Sinai, goes to the same mountain, and wishes to have this revelation of God, the same as Moshe wanted when he asked, can I see God's face? And God says, no one can see my face and live. And he there hears, you know, like Moshe, some momentous kind of upheaval, natural upheaval. And then he hears, and this we say on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur in that famous poem, Unatana Tokev, he says he hears a still small voice and also the loud sound of the shofar at the same time. So there's also in the book by Malcolm Brown, as I understand it, is that theologians call God's preferential option for the poor, interesting term. And here it is called the politics of anatta, which is the core principle, Buddhist principle of non-self. So I wish to explore that book in a little while, but I do recommend it to you. Now, in the Bible, in the Tanakh, We find that at the end of all the prophets, and we'll be reading this Haftorah tomorrow, which is called Shabbat Hagadol, the Great Sabbath. It always precedes Yom Kippur. And in that chapters of that is from the book of Malachi, and it is the actual end of all of the prophets. The prophet, of course, like many prophets, is asking the people to return to a life of, if you will, of honest service to God, rather than only seeing the perfunctory performance of coming closer offerings as the end of it, whereas he believes the end is much more to create within us a sense of kavanah, intentionality, when we get involved. And he, like all the prophets, says that the evil ones will be punished, and the ones who are returning to God will indeed be indeed will be rewarded. And then we get this very strange thing, and why it's associated with Elijah. After talking about all of this, all of these things about observing the law, etc., he says in verse 23, chapter 3, he says, and I shall quote, "Hine anochi sholeach lechem et Eliyahu hanavi lifnei bo yom Adonai hagadol v'hanorah." That's where the hagadol is, what gives us the idea of Shabbat hagadol, the great Sabbath. So, lo, I will send the prophet Elijah to you before the coming of the awesome, fearful day of God. And because of this, he's seen as the harbinger of the Messiah, the end of days. And what is the role of sending Elijah? And here is how it connects with Passover. Veheshiv lev avot al banim, velev banim al avotam, pen avo, vihiketi et haaretz cherem. And it ends with that, saying that I send the prophet Elijah to you before the coming of the awesome, fearful day of God. He shall reconcile parents with children and children with their parents. Literally, it says he will turn the heart of the children to their parents and the heart of the parents to their children. And this seems to be that if this occurs when I come, the end of days, I do not strike the whole land with utter destruction. They didn't want to end the Haftorah with the words utter destruction. So the Haftorah repeats, here I send Elijah before you, the coming of the awesome, fearful day of God. Okay. So if we take this admonition of Malachi at face value, it says that ultimately what is important in the Passover is the intergenerational discussion. So Elijah attends the Seder not to drink the wine from the fifth cup, which of course everybody talks about, but he comes to hear, to listen, and to hear if the intergenerational conversation is taking place. And what is that conversation about? Well, of course, we'll have many of those going on in our own, with our own family and friends, but the generational gap, or the generation gap, in a sense, is really needs to be repaired in some way, because that ultimately will bring a sense of redemption. And of course, all of Passover has to do with redeeming the children of Israel from Mitzrayim, from Egypt. And of course, all of us know the traditional Hasidic and Kabbalistic idea of Mitzrayim is not to read it as the country Egypt, Mitzrayim, but to read it as Meitzarim, narrow places. So what's the kind of conversation supposed to be about? The conversation is supposed to be about how the generation, the older generation, the generation of the parents, talk about their own, if you will, episodes in their lives of getting through narrow places. Young people, and I'm glad that I have young people in my own family, never really seem to consider the fact when they get into a narrow place, they panic and they don't know they can get through it. And the responsibility of the elders is to tell them, no, there are always going to be narrow places in your life. And there is the possibility, if you continue to walk through the narrow place, that you will get to the merchavia, to the spaciousness. Min ha-meitzar karati, out of the narrow place I call to you, and I will respond to you with spaciousness. I love the word spaciousness, merchavia. Seems to fit into what I sort of see as part of my practice. that, for instance, when things are bothering me, even physical things that are bothering me, I realize that I am not defined by that. A lot of people, once they're in sort of chronic pain, unfortunately, everything focuses around that. And I think the practice gives us an opportunity to create spaciousness around it. And in that spaciousness, we understand that there is much more to us than our ailment that we have. And that can be a psychological ailment as well as a physical ailment. So what we do by concentrating on our very being, of being alive, of breath, etc., we begin to realize there's far more in our lives, far more in our bodies, far more than just the ailments and just that pain. So Elijah is the Redeemer if we basically help him along. There's no mention here of the fact that it's going to be someone from outside, the Messiah, is going to cure everything. No, we have to do the work. And that work is very hard because maybe some people tell me it's messianic to think that you can actually bridge the generation gap. But I'm glad to see, and I can speak my own experience as a parent, as the kids get older, you begin to develop a different kind of relationship. And indeed, there are many, many opportunities to, if you will, bridge that gap. And one of the ways, as I mentioned, that I think it's important is for parents or uncles, aunts, however you connect with the younger generation, basically to enunciate very clearly that it's a team effort. And no generation could do it alone. At best, what we hope is we pass on our commitments, our convictions, things that have helped us in our lives. So we pass that on to the next generation. I believe they would find that remarkably helpful because I think this younger generation, Gen Z, whatever you want to call it, seem to be a little bit stuck in a way that perhaps are the generation of those of us who are in the 70s or approaching the 70s, lived at a different time. Is it tougher now than it was? In some ways, it's always tough. But yes, it's tougher now than perhaps it has been in the past. So that's why Elijah comes. Elijah comes to hear the conversation. And I'm hoping you will have an opportunity to make that conversation. Now, a lot of kids will say, I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear it. You're right. You can't get that. You tell me that every year. Oh, I don't want to hear it. I know. But you know what? If you're sitting at a table, in my case, I sit at the table with, I sat with my mom. My mom was very emotional about the Passover, very emotional. And it was very hard to sit with her in a way because, first of all, she would cry and all that because she was a slave once. Sitting at a table with a slave, she had been in a Nazi labor camp for a number of years. So sitting there with an actual slave and having her comment, you think that was slavery? I know slavery, right? Can be very disconcerting. And we were not very empathic to her to a certain degree. But we eventually programmed into the Seder the time when she would cry. So we were able to curb it a little bit. It was very uncomfortable for us. Parents, kids don't want to see their parents be, if you will, emotional. It bothers them sometimes, It sort of creates a new kind of way of seeing your parents. And eventually, children might even get to the point where they understand that their parents are human beings as well, and not just, if you will, roles played within a family structure. So it's time for conversation. So. Give it some thought, and we'll take a moment of quiet, and we can open up our discussion.